Do appreciate the tie-in with the series that we're involved in out of Egypt, looking or going through the book of Exodus. And if you've, we hope that this reveals wonderful material to you in the book of Exodus, that it becomes alive to you, and that perhaps maybe you want to spend some extra time reading over and reading in the book of Exodus and reading some of the chapters as we're going through this to help. So that gives you some background as we go through this. As is my habit, I work ahead on my sermon material, and I'm really excited about where we're going in the book of Exodus and the spiritual lessons that are there. I regret that so many people there is a large segment of people, I'll put it that way, feel that the Old Testament has little or no value to us today. But boy, they are mistaken, and they're missing some of the best material in the book. It's not an Old Testament, a New Testament thing. In my opinion, it's an Older Testament and a Newer Testament. It's a unit. And so it should be viewed that way. And I do appreciate, too, Jesse mentioning about Yahweh. And I've been trying to use it more myself. It's difficult after all these years, but I have become convinced, as have several of us, that we should be referring to God by His personal name. He does have a name, and His name is Yahweh, and we should use that. There's a group that think that Jehovah is His name, but that's not really His name. Yahweh is His name. And so whenever you look in for instance, in the Old Testament, wherever you see the capital L-O-R-D, it should be read as Yahweh. And so it's all right. We should probably make those expressions in our scripture references and stuff. But again, we've used the word for Yahweh as God for so long that that's usually the way we make our reference, and I'll probably do that this evening because I'm still making transitions myself. But it's something for us to keep in mind. You know, in this evening we're looking at the second part of this message about a deliverer. And we're looking at, we call this from prophet prep, because this is the beginning of Moses, of course. In part one, we looked at baby Moses, you know, his preservation, how that took place, that Moses' preservation was ultimately in Yahweh's trustworthy hands. Pharaoh's daughter went down to the river to bathe, and he saw this little ark that Jochebed had built to place him in the Nile, and in hope there, of course, to spare his life. And you kind of wonder what went through Jochebed's mind, though, in all this. I mean, she wanted to save her child. She put him in and this little ark that she made and sent him off in the river. What was her expectation? Could she have realistically expected that Pharaoh's daughter was going to find that child and raise that child as her own? You know, Pharaoh's daughter comes down, and she hears that baby as it begins to cry, and she's supposed to hate the Hebrew. She's supposed to kill the child, but her heart was touched. You know, and then in rushes Moses' sister Miriam, and she's watching from a distance, and she offers this, and she says, would you like me to find a Hebrew woman to nurse that child for you? And Jochebed winds up here being paid to raise her own child. Can't get any better than that, can it? And actually, once it was weaned, Moses was presented to this princess as her own son. And Pharaoh wanted rid of all the Jews, but for his daughter, he allowed this exception here. And I mean, how could one child, you know, make a difference anyway? I mean, it was only one child. He's not going to make a difference, so we'll allow it. But God's providence, of course, is at work in all things. Pharaoh's decree of death is no match for the maker of life. Yahweh's providence is evidence in several things in this story up to this point. The princess coming down to bathe at that exact moment. No, the current of the river bringing that ark around right at that time. Her glancing at the ark. Moses crying at the moment that they opened it. And you know, maybe God gave that Moses a little pinch or something, but he cried right at the right moment. And Miriam, of course, being there and offering then a solution to the present problem that they were in. We see, of course, that God is in control. He is working all things together for our good. You probably have a story that you can tell of how several circumstances that at first seem unattached come together to provide something special for you in your life. Here's a story. The story has been told before, but it is a dramatic story of exactly how those things come to pass sometimes. A man by the name of Frederick Nolan, this was his adopted name, but he renamed himself Frederick Nolan. He lived in Northern Africa. It was during a time of persecution. And over the past decades, the Muslims had been murdering hundreds of thousands of Christians. And because he was a Christian now, he was being pursued by the soldiers. They were hunting him down. They wanted to kill him. And he had been running and had been hiding for days. And one night, he realized that he was surrounded by the soldiers. He saw this small cave up on the side of a hill, so he decided to crawl into it. He thought it would be a good hiding place, but he could hear the soldiers as they were hunting for him. And he realized that probably this was going to be his last stand, that eventually they would searching every place, that they would search the cave that he was in, and they would eventually find him and eventually execute him. But while he was there, while he was waiting, he noticed as he was looking at the cave entrance that there was a spider there, and a spider began to do its work. And he noticed as he heard the soldiers, but waited for the soldiers, that the spider actually put a web across the front of that cave. And as the soldiers came up there looking for him, they looked toward that cave, and they saw that spider web was across the cave. So they assumed, because the spider web was across the cave, that no one had gone in there recently. And so they left, and that, of course, left him to escape death. Later, as he reflected on this event, Frederick Nolan wrote in his journal, "Where God is, a spider web is like a wall. Where God is not, a wall is but a spider web." Moses' preservation was a miraculous event here, as is ours. And this evening we want to concentrate on just a few things here. First, we want to look to Moses and his education. Jochebed, of course, now is being paid to raise her own child. She's got a limited amount of time, and we should take what little time we have with our children to plant the spiritual seeds we can. And in the end, it will pay great dividends to them and to us. Even though, of course, Moses was going to grow up and he was going to spend many years, up to 40, his first 40 years, in the palace of Pharaoh, we realize that the most important educational time in a child's life are the earliest years. In fact, there is one group of people who say, "Give me your child for their first 5 years, and I'll have them for the rest of their life." Most of the education, most of the learning process happens in the early years. I'm amazed by this, all this stuff that comes out now that's advancing these young children. You know, I teach them how to read and stuff at these young ages. I didn't know they could do that. Apparently I didn't push my kids enough. You know, but I'm amazed by that. But they teach us one thing, that they can learn, and they are learning very early. And so here she was, hired, employed by Pharaoh's daughter to teach her own child. And what do you think she was teaching? She was teaching the background, the spiritual principles that were a part of her faith to him, the part that he carried with him, even though he learned some of the other things during the time that he was there in that palace. Then his Egyptian education began there in the courts of Pharaoh. Now, this would have been some of the best education in the world at that time, the best that it had to offer. They were advanced civilization at this point. After all, look at the details in the pyramid to understand how intelligent these people were at this time. Their knowledge. And they were doing brain surgery during this time. There were a lot of things that they had advanced, and here he was in the best place in the world for a education about the world. And in fact, Acts 7:22 says that Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. No doubt he would have studied at Hierapolis, which is the Temple of the Sun. It was the Harvard of its day. Much learning did not lead them to know God, though. They believed in many gods. They believed a man came from a worm that crawled up out of the Nile River. Of course, here we advanced how many thousand years, and we're about right back to that same theory, aren't we? Educated the head without changing the heart here, but we don't need to fool ourselves here. We have got to have the heart right for the education to be right. Perfect knowledge is found in knowing God. Hebrews, the 11th chapter, and verses 24 through 27 says, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." Moses could have had all that the world had to offer, but his heart said, wait a second. You know, my real mother, my real father live in a slave hut. And while I enjoy this splendor, they work in the fields all day long for nothing. And they're treated like animals. And so he turned his back on that world, and he went with the people of God. And I'm sure people thought he was crazy. Now, if you really, really sell out for God, many people will think that of you. I've seen parents who essentially have said that about their child when they've had a child who's decided to go into pastoral ministry. They say, "You're crazy. You're too talented to go into ministry." It's only as if only idiots go into ministry, that we can't do anything else. And maybe I can. I don't know, but I think some of the others can. But they give that impression that only people that can't do anything else end up in ministry. And you're too talented. They don't understand. But people don't understand the changes that come into people's lives when they give their life to Christ and they reorder their priorities. They don't understand that priority list any longer, because it's so dramatically different than the priority list that we see in the world today. But this led, of course, to his complication in verses 11 through 14. "And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren, and he looked on their burdens, and he said, spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren, and he looked this way and that way. And when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand." Now his secret is out. You know, he realized that in his own power he could succeed at burying one Egyptian, because the secret was known before long. But years later, God would use that same man, of course, to bury an entire Egyptian army in the Red Sea. You know, he's got a lot more to learn, but it is time for a desert experience. So many people in the Bible had one, and you will too at times, so that God can teach you and mold you and remake you and turn you into something better that gives him glory. Notice his isolation here in verse 15. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. He flees Egypt for Midian. He gets married. He becomes a shepherd, and there he sits for 40 years. Surely many days, he said, what we just sang in our song, do you remember me? Where are you? There was a teaching element, and there's also a timing element. God had much to teach Moses, and he taught it a lot of this in the desert with his family and with some sheep. He that is faithful in that which is least shall be faithful also in much. It is the seminary of solitude for Moses. Elijah attended it, so did John the Baptist, so did the Apostle Paul. Even Jesus, you know, spent 30 years in a carpenter shop getting ready for just a 3-year ministry. But there is a timing element that's involved. For 40 years in Egypt, Moses was taught that he was somebody. He spent 40 years in the desert learning that he was nobody. In his next 40 years, he was a leader of millions, leading them to the promised land, realizing that God is the master of taking nobodies and making them somebody. There's some lessons here for us to remember. First one is God is never in a hurry, but he always keeps his promise. Now his time is not our time. Always have to keep that in mind. He always keeps his promise. Secondly, we should build arcs of protection for our children. And I think that's an important one. Last week we spent a lot of time talking about raising children. But I think we need to spend more time in arcs of protection for our children. They're the most valuable commodity that we have. Therefore, they should receive that kind of priority in our family life, and we should be building arcs of protection. It is all right to do that. Think more about this as we go along in this series. God's providence is always at work. And God's not on vacation. And I like that in the back when Elijah's fighting with the prophets of Baal, and they're yelling all day long, and he has some fun with them. It's actually a humorous event if you want to read all that. But one of the things is, well, maybe, you know, they're calling out for Baal, so maybe he's on vacation. Yahweh doesn't take a vacation. Isn't that good to know? You know, that is really good. Be faithful and God will pay your wages. God will take care of you. He's never left the same. He's always taking care of you. Education minus God makes one foolish. There are a lot of intelligent people scholastically in this world. And they can amaze you with the things that they're able to come up with, and the papers they're able to write, and the experiments they're able to accomplish, and the things they're able to do. But, and if they don't have God, it's really foolishness. After all, they're just playing around with God, what God's already put in place anyway. They've never done anything that hasn't been there and presented by God for them to use, have they? Now, one of them's created a thing, made a thing. They just use what God's already placed. But they think they're so smart. Live spiritually by choosing God's people over the world. Sometimes we have a tendency to draw our closest associates from people who never come to church, who never acknowledge God. And I don't know quite why that is, because there's some things in this world that I never completely understand. Because my mind doesn't make, I cannot understand anorexia. I love to eat. I can't understand that. And I can't understand having my closest friend that's not a part of the body of Christ. I can't. That's where my associations are. That's where my attachments are. I have friends outside, of course, and that's a good thing, but they're not my closest. Final thing is, the backside of the desert is God's schoolhouse where prophets are prepared. Sometimes when we feel that we're alone in the desert, when we're wondering if God remembers us, it's really the time of preparation. He's working on us to use us in a magnificent way. Of course, we know we run ahead in the story how God's going to use Moses. There's a journey there to get there, but we know how He's going to use Moses. We don't always see it ourselves. Do we? We don't see how God's working in our own life. Sometimes we maybe like to run ahead and see how the story ends for us. Maybe we would. But all the time, God's working, and He's at work.